stomach cancer when I was 12, and lost my dad shortly after that to a heart attack about 4 or 5 years later. And ever since then, I've kind of thought things were wrong. I thought my parents were fairly healthy people, but that something in our environment, in our society, and our lifestyles was off. And so I wanted to learn more about health and nutrition. So this is where I got into fitness and nutrition. I'm a certified personal trainer, I'm a CrossFit coach, and I'm also a health coach. So without further ado, I'm just going to get into this information because we've got a lot to cover. Understanding is all about the hormones. So basically, I thought my understanding of hormones before I learned this was kind of like from a bodybuilding approach. And I thought they were more like performance-enhancing drugs, like a substance, and not so much as a communicator. And that's what a hormone actually is. A hormone is actually a communicator. So it's kind of like this system of emails that get shot out from different parts of your body, and it communicates with the hypothalamus. And it tells the hypothalamus in the brain how to interact with your system. So how to turn on metabolism, how to turn on your energy production, the electron transport chain, to store energy, to build tissue. I mean, all these different things. So when I started to learn about hormones and how they affected us, then I got a better understanding of how we can manipulate them to better suit our environment. Nowadays, we don't live in a super, super healthy environment. We live in a jaded environment. Let's just keep it real. So my purpose in this was to try to figure out how can I biohack hormones to get the outcomes that I want to get, which is health and vitality and energy and focus and performance and all these different things. So understanding that it is all about the hormones, and understanding that this is the primary reason on how we lose weight, we feel better, we control our energy, all these things. So real quick, so for everybody who has a device or a tablet or anything, if you go to my website at musclesandveggie.com, the very first blog post says biohacking your hormones, July 29th. You can click on the link and it will pull up this presentation on your phone. So you can have this to look at later, but you can also look at it now if you can't quite see the screen as well or something like that. So that's musclesandveggies.com, and the very first blog post on the homepage. So, okay, so problem number one, and this is like the top problem on the pillar, is insulin. So here is some indications that you might have a problem with insulin. Weight gain, cravings for sugar, intense hunger, feeling frequently hungry. If you can't go longer than 2 to 2.5 hours without eating something, you probably have some sort of insulin problem. Difficulty concentrating in between meals, that's a pretty big sign that your brain is struggling to find glucose, which is an insulin problem. Feeling anxious or panicky, same thing. Your brain wants glucose and it's freaking out trying to find it. Lack of focus or motivation, and fatigue is a big one. So this is how I figured this out for me, which I'm a huge fan of self-experimentation. I'm a huge fan of listening to your body. So I figured this out because I thought, I'm eating a healthy breakfast. I'm having oatmeal and banana and peanut butter every morning. This is healthy for me. Well, by 11 o'clock, I'm starving, and I mean like absolutely starving. I can't focus. I have difficulty concentrating. I have to basically stop work and figure out how I'm going to eat right now. And a lot of times I would go get my lunch and eat some of it just so I could go back to work and function. So I knew something was off. I'm like, hey, what is the deal? And then I would eat lunch, and then an hour or two later, I would have this huge afternoon crash. And I mean, it was like I had to take a nap or eat something, one or the other. And so I'm like, man, what is going on? Like, this is, well, I'm eating healthy, you know, and I couldn't figure it out. And so that led me to look into blood sugar and insulin, because I knew something was off. So what is insulin? Insulin is a peptide hormone released by the beta cells in the pancreas. Okay, so I'm going to get kind of nerdy on you in this thing, but just to break it down for you, it's a hormone that's released from the pancreas, and the primary stimulator, this very bottom sentence right here, is sensitive to glucose concentrations in the blood. So the main stimulator of insulin is glucose concentrations in the blood. So what does insulin do? It's a storage hormone. So it's designed to take glucose that's in the blood and distribute it where it needs to go. So let's break this down. Once muscles and liver are full of glycogen, so the sugar in your blood gets converted into glycogen, the first place it goes is your muscle tissue. Your muscle has stored carbohydrates inside of it. And when we work out, we use those stored carbohydrates. That's called glycogen. And then when we eat carbohydrates, those fill back up. Okay, so we refill those stores in our muscles. Now, when those are full, we go to our liver. And our liver stores glucose. This is primarily for the brain. So basically, once those both are full, I want you to picture a glass of water right here. When you fill up that glass of water, it spills over eventually. Where does it spill over? Once we fill our liver and our muscle, what happens next? It goes to fat cells. And we cram glucose, we convert it into triglycerides. Okay, it's called lipogenesis. Lipo, fat, genesis, creation. Okay, so fat creation, and we cram it into our fat cells. Okay? So here's the other point here. Glucose is toxic in the blood. It's toxic. That's why if we have too much glucose in a diabetic person, that you start developing neuropathy and your tissues start rotting and all these bad things start happening. That is why, that's what's happening. Glucose actually is toxic to the blood. So what ends up happening here is pre-diabetes or diabetes, it's really simple. It's basically just we have too much insulin all the time. And what we're going to learn here today with hormones is sometimes when we have too much of one hormone, the body starts actually becoming resistant to it. And so it doesn't work as good anymore. That hormone, that communicator, because that's what a hormone is, it's just a communication system to the hypothalamus, is suddenly not working anymore because we have too much of it. And then blood sugar piles up in the blood because the cells aren't taking in the glucose. Okay, really simple. So higher glucose equals higher insulin equals lower fat burning. Because when you have higher insulin, you have higher glucose in the blood, you have effectively told your body, I don't need to metabolize fat. I need to metabolize this glucose because it's toxic in my bloodstream if I have too much of it. So the higher your insulin and glucose go, the lower your body titrates down fat metabolism or fat oxidation. So it's actually really simple. It's just a matter of if we have a glucose problem, we need less glucose. You know, it's really, really simple. If you can't start your weed eater, you don't sit there and keep giving it more and more gas. What happens? It floods. And then you have to wait 5 or 10 minutes to get it to unwind. So I know that's kind of a poor analogy, but if we have too much glucose in our blood and our insulin is too high, we need less glucose. So we need other ways to fuel ourselves, and that's what we're going to get into. This link right here, all these links will break down. If you click on those, they'll break down what these things are. This first one, higher glucose, is a link to a study. We're going to get into more about that here in a second. So let's move on to the next one, biohacking insulin. So now we know what insulin is, how it works. How do we biohack it? How do we figure out how to manipulate it? All right. So the number one way to do this is a low carb diet. where it says low carb diet, if you click on that, it'll take you to the last presentation I did here, which is all about low carb ketogenic diets. So you can walk through the slides, you can learn all about that in my last presentation. So this is about reducing insulin by eating saturated fats, vegetable carbohydrates, nuts, seeds, and a moderate amount of protein. This is not an Atkins high protein diet. If we do that, we can develop further complications with high protein because high protein actually raises uric acid levels. It's hard to process by the body if we get too much protein, and it actually is hard on our kidneys as well. But the main thing it does also, if we have too much protein, is it's called gluconeogenesis. So glucose, new creation. Glucose, new creation. So we take protein, when it, we get too much protein, we don't use it, we create glucose out of it. So then what do you think that does? Raises your insulin. So we're back to the same story. Basically protein turning into carbohydrates and turning into insulin. Okay, so the benefits of both of these, and now we're going to talk about fasting. So this first link up here, fasting, this will take you to a video of Dr. Jason Fung. It's called The Ideology of Obesity. And if you want to learn about fasting and the benefits of long-term and intermittent fasting, this guy is your resource. He is doing phenomenal things in his clinic in Canada with reversing type 2 diabetes, reversing obesity. Really, really good stuff on just fasting. Just simply fasting. Stuff that ancient cultures did for thousands of years. It doesn't matter who you are. Jesus, Gandhi, it doesn't matter who you are. They all practice fasting and they preach about fasting. So, I highly recommend looking into this, especially if you have autoimmune stuff going on. If you have different autoimmune type, skin disorders, leaky gut, any of these things that kind of are autoimmunity, fasting will reset your immunity. And that's the first thing we're going to get into. Well, no, it's the third thing on the list there. So the first thing it does is autophagy. And that, where it says autophagy, that link right there will take you to the term of what autophagy is. Then we have increased mental focus. All right. The increased mental focus, this is a link that basically breaks down. It's a study on ketones, dietary fasting. It reduced or reversed the symptoms of Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, dementia, and epilepsy. So the ketones in fasting and the ketogenic diet are literally, and this is based on, all my resources here are based on PubMed, which is a national, it's a national science and database where doctors and scientists, they do randomized controlled studies and they post information. So any of these resources you can click on and read these studies for yourself. So I thought that was really interesting because my grandmother actually passed away of Parkinson's and dementia, and she was a sugar eating fool. She was. She fed us Buckeyes, these little chocolate peanut butter things, like they were going out of style whenever we were kids. And you know, God bless her. I love her, but she loved to bake and loved to eat sugar. And lo and behold, she got dementia and Alzheimer's, which they're proving is Alzheimer's is basically type 3 diabetes, where your brain has become resistant to the glucose because you have so much of it, and it doesn't have a fuel source, and so it's not taking in glucose, just like we talked about, it gets resistant to insulin, and then parts of the brain actually die, and that's what Alzheimer's is. So you lose your memory, you lose different cognitive functions like that. So, improved immune system. This was a study at University of Southern California that they said fasting triggered stem cell regeneration. So basically it was improving our immune system and tissue repair. I thought that was really interesting. The whole study is on there. If you click on it, you can read that on how fasting completely resets our immune system by actually regenerating our stem cells. Really interesting. So, increased HGH. This is a study on how they took 6 male subjects and they tested their growth hormone. And they did it on a fed state and a fasted state. Okay? So, there was a marked drop in blood glucose and a marked rise in acetoacetate and fatty acids, which was also correlated with a huge growth hormone release. Let me break that down a little bit simpler. Acetoacetate and fatty acids are basically just ketones and fats, and they were stimulated by the release of growth hormone. So what does growth hormone do? It helps us burn more fat. That's what it tells you. It's a hormone. Just like you said, hormones are communicators. It's telling my hypothalamus, we don't have a lot of energy, that growth hormone, we need to burn fat. And so it tells the brain sends the signal to the body and gets things rolling. So again, we're seeing how hormones are communicators with our brain. So the next one is lower blood pressure. I thought this was amazing right here. They took 174 people with hypertension, okay? That's a blood pressure of 140 over 90, all right? 174 people, some of them with stage 3 hypertension, which is really high hypertension, like 180 over 110, okay? After a 10-day water fast, they had an average drop of 37, okay, in their systolic and 13 in their diastolic. So basically, the 140 over 90 went to basically like 110 over 80 or 110 over 75. Like really like low blood pressure, actually not high. The stage 3 people had a drop of 60 and 17. So they went from stage 3, 180 blood pressure, to normal, 120. Okay, so just in a 10-day water fast. So even just fasting, like imagine if you did one 24-hour fast a week and you had high blood pressure, you could biohack your high blood pressure and get off your high blood pressure medication. So even just intermittent fasting, not even a 24-hour fast, just intermittent fasting will lower your blood pressure. So that's proven in the scientific literature here. Lower cholesterol, okay, so this one's cool too. They took 57 males and 26 females, and they tested their cholesterol during Ramadan, which is a big fast in a certain culture. So they took the individuals, and at the end of the fast, they had huge reductions in LDL, which is supposed to be like our bad cholesterol, and they actually had a rise in their HDL. So interesting stuff how fasting actually can completely lower our cholesterol and raise our good cholesterol. I don't know if you guys, anybody in here knows who Jimmy Moore is, but I thought it was interesting. He did a long-term fast and dropped his cholesterol by 100 points. So took himself from a high cholesterol to dropped it 100 points just from fasting. Okay, so long story short, the benefits of this is we're gonna increase insulin and leptin sensitivity. So we're going to talk more about leptin here in a little bit, but we're going to basically get more sensitive to insulin through fasting and a low-carb diet. So that way we don't have too much of that signal going to the brain. We don't get resistant to it. So that's where we want to stay at. We don't overeat. We become more fat-adapted, which if you're into performance, you will use fat as fuel before you will use your glycogen, that stored muscle carbohydrate, as fuel. So that's another benefit. We don't tap into our muscle glycogen as much, and we burn more fat for energy while we're performing. So you can decrease your triglyceride levels dramatically from both of these, fasting and carbohydrate, which lowers your low-carb diet, which also lowers your heart disease, inflammation and free radical damage. So I've seen a lot of my clients that have knee, back pain, shoulder pain, all kinds of stuff, have tons of results with a low-carb diet on reducing their inflammation. Weight gain, metabolic risk, that's a no-brainer that we're going to, once we optimize our insulin, we're going to lose weight and primarily fat. We don't want to lose weight. We want to keep our good weight, but we want to lose fat. All right, so problem number two, stress and sleep. Okay, so right here we're looking at a regular circadian rhythm. The balance between cortisol and melatonin, and when this falls apart, the body starts producing too much cortisol. So I'm going to break this down really easy, okay? These are like a teeter-totter. They're inverse. When cortisol goes up, melatonin goes low, okay? That gets us out of bed in the morning. When the day goes on, our cortisol is supposed to fall, and our melatonin is supposed to rise. And then we wind down and we sleep deep sleep that recovers us. It resets all these different systems in our body, including muscle recovery, including brain recovery. There's just all these different things, right? So if we lead a really high stress life, and we're going to get into that, you're going to have increased cortisol. So this, if you click on increased cortisol, it's going to take you to a link about that. This is going to lead to high blood pressure, fatigue, belly fat, mood swings, puffy face, adrenal fatigue, and burnout, okay? So now let's look at what happens when your cortisol, this is a normal rhythm right here, big spike, and it drops off through the day. Now, this is a jaded one. So we have an even huger spike, okay? And then look how high it still is whenever it's supposed to be down here on a normal one, okay? So our stress is keeping us, our cortisol way high, and it's not allowing our melatonin to get very high. So we may even still sleep 6, 7, 8 hours a night, but you're not getting that quality, deep REM sleep that recovers you and resets all these systems, that turns on our energy and turns on our fat burning and turns on all these good hormones, these good signals with the brain. Okay, so this is really, really, really important. If you guys get nothing else out of today at all, start working on your sleep. Start optimizing your sleep. And we're going to get into some ways how. So the effects of cortisol. Elevated levels of cortisol. Let's see, what do I got for this one? So this is a study right here. If you click on that top one, elevated levels of cortisol, this is 25 obese subjects. They tested their AM and their PM cortisol. Individuals with elevated PM cortisol were, what does that say? Dramatically affected with their correlation of higher inflammation, energy problems, circadian rhythm, and subcutaneous fat. So what does that mean? That basically the individuals that had PM cortisol elevated, their melatonin was suppressed. They had, let's go back. They had a lower level of melatonin. Their PM cortisol, right in here, this time right here is elevated. They had higher problems with inflammation. They had higher problems with energy balance. And they had more subcutaneous fat, more belly fat. Okay? So this is showing you right here scientific data that elevated cortisol from our stress and from lack of sleep keeps belly fat on us. Okay? So cortisol is produced basically in the adrenal cortex, which is also the adrenal gland. Two little peanut things that sit over our kidneys, and they pump out this fight or flight substance. And what I mean by fight or flight is our stress hormone. So cortisol is the major stimulator of when something scares us. We get that adrenaline rush. That's all from the adrenal glands and from the adrenal cortex. So that's what cortisol does. So cortisol equals burning muscle. And we're going to talk about why. And then that equals glucose. And that equals insulin, which equals problems. We're back to the same cycle here of insulin, right? So cortisol, when you get that spike in cortisol and something scares you or something stimulates those adrenal glands, it tells the body we need glucose right now. Right now. We can't take fat and make glucose. It just doesn't work like that. So the body goes after its source of glucose that hangs on your body, which, again, we go back to gluconeogenesis. So if you eat too much protein, what did we decide happens? You convert that into glucose. Well, guess what? If you don't intake protein, your body can burn it off your body. Where do you think that protein comes from? Our muscle. So all of a sudden, your cortisol spikes, and you go into a catabolic state, which that basically means you're tapping into your own muscle tissue, converting glucose, raising your insulin, and therefore leading you into the same cycle. So that's part of the problem is if our cortisol is high, not only are we not sleeping good, we're stressed out, but we're catabolic half the day, and we're burning our muscle, which is lowering our metabolism and allowing us to store more fat because our insulin's high and we're burning muscle. So you can see how this cortisol could be a problem. Why do we need melatonin? This right here, decreased levels of melatonin. This basically is a PubMed article that showed when they found low melatonin due to circadian imbalance, they also found depression neurodegenerative brain disorders, high cardiovascular risk, heart attack, stroke, cancer, renal fatigue, all from low levels of melatonin.
How we know that we have low level for melatonin?
So we'll get into that. You can do, actually, melatonin is one of the easiest things to find. You can find it in your saliva, your urine. They don't sell any like home test kits for this stuff, so it has to be something that you got through your doctor to actually know what are my melatonin levels. But there's a pretty good, easy indicator to know if your melatonin's on point. Is heart rate variability. You can test your heart rate and see where your stress levels are at. And if your stress levels are high, you can just pretty much bet that your melatonin is low. So that's one way I would try to hack it for me, is to see if I can know what my heart rate variability is and know where my stress is at, and then also how am I sleeping. So I track my sleep, and then you can pretty much tell by your sleep, especially if you have a wearable, you can see where your deep cycles are. And if you don't have a lot of those really deep cycles in your sleep, you probably don't have much melatonin. You're just not getting that deep sleep. But we'll talk more about that. So the study here found that basically all these different things were related to lack of melatonin, which was lack of sleep in the end. So various diseases such as dementia, mood disorders, severe pain, cancer, diabetes, all these things basically have been correlated side by side with lower melatonin. So melatonin equals better sleep, equals lower cortisol because our stress is low, equals lower glucose, equals more balance and health. So optimizing our cortisol and melatonin. So how do we biohack these things? Cortisol is the main one here. I put some supplements and some different things on the biohacks of melatonin. Avoiding too much alcohol was on both, caffeine was on both, things like that. So the alcohol one, basically, this paper here is just a paper on how alcohol and cortisol levels were side by side with each other. They found that heavy drinkers had, all like every single time, 99% of the time, they had elevated cortisol. So alcohol is a big one if you drink too much. Caffeine is a huge one. Obviously, I'm going to break this down for you guys really simply. Caffeine has an 8-hour half-life, okay? So a half-life means that it takes this much time for the substance you put in your body to cut in half. So for example, if you click on caffeine, it's going to take you to a blog post of mine that I did some self-experimentation on caffeine. So I was taking in, let's just pull this up so I can show the picture here. I was taking, this was actually a study based on that. So, okay, so we'll find it later. Anyways, I think it's on the next one actually. But anyways, caffeine was a major stimulator of cortisol. That's obviously a no-brainer. So in the experiment that I did, I was taking in about 100 milligrams of caffeine in the morning. That's not that much. That's like a cup and a half, 2 cups of coffee, right? But an 8-hour half-life means that 8 hours later, I still have 50 milligrams of caffeine in my blood. 8 hours after that, I still have 25. Okay, so these things gradually taper off, and that's affecting my melatonin at night. The second that I cut down to decaf and started getting like between 15 and 30 milligrams of caffeine, my sleep dramatically improved, and I posted my wearable data on the blog post. It was like not just one night either. It was like I did it for like 3 or 4 nights in a row. I'm like, all right, there's something here because my sleep has definitely improved. And I felt better too, which was a major thing. I didn't feel good coming off the caffeine, I'll tell you that much, but I felt good once I kind of came off caffeine and started sleeping better. So, super stress for people. Get them out of your life or minimize your exposure to them as much as you possibly can. They will raise your cortisol. Chronic cardio is another thing that will raise your cortisol. It's a stress to the body. So long distance running, That's why you see, and I don't want to bash people that do marathons and stuff, but you see a lot of skinny fat people that run marathons, and this is why. It's because their cortisol is chronically elevated from too much cardio. So, chronic calorie restricting, what do you think that's going to do? It's going to raise our stress and raise our cortisol. What's interesting, though, is that when you fast, we talked about fasting earlier, you get the stress response, but you actually don't get the cortisol that you would get from calorie restricting long term. And that's the weirdest thing, that you can not eat anything and be healthier than if you just ate a little bit. So, and that's some of the stuff you can learn from Dr. Jason Fong about fasting, and it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. We're going to do like 15 minutes of questions at the end. Write them down those questions. High fructose corn syrup, bad omega-6 oil. We're going to talk about both these at the same time. Let's just face it. The omega-6 oils like vegetable oil, sunflower, cottonseed oil, all these bad oils, they are hard to process in the body, so they become a stressor, raise our cortisol. Same thing with high fructose corn syrup. Fructose is just evil all the way around. That's like Satan sugar right there to me. So, biohacks, number one, me time. Take some time for yourself, okay? Find out the things that you de-stress with. Spiritual stuff, working out, hiking, fishing, gardening, art, music, whatever it is for you, find that time and de-stress. If you make time for that, I promise you your cortisol will go down. And you will be way more efficient at your goals and whatever they are, and whether it's fat loss or energy or performance or muscle gain, whatever it is. That me time, that de-stressing time is so, so important. Earthing and grounding. Okay, I'm going to get kind of hippie-ish on you right here, but I've got studies to prove it. So, if you click clinically proven, you click on this study right here. This is 12 subjects with sleep dysfunction, pain, stress, and they grounded them to the earth during their sleep. So they wore devices that grounded them to our earth, the negative connection we get from the earth, while they slept. Okay, check this out. They tested a baseline cortisol to start, and then they did it every 4 hours for 8 weeks, roughly. Okay? Measurable improvements found. So measurable improvements in cortisol found at the end of this 8 weeks from just connecting yourself to the earth. And this is scientifically proven. So if you click on that link, write down, read the conclusion. There's a paragraph that has all the benefits that these individuals got from just being in contact with the earth. So if you read the conclusion on that, you can see all the benefits they got. So important. It will lower your cortisol. It will help you raise your melatonin at night. Just night day difference in my performance since I started making time to just get my feet, bare feet, in contact with the grass and the earth and laying on rocks and, just being in nature and enjoying that. That's part of my me time. Part of that me time. Okay? Early morning sun exposure. I got another one for you. Okay, so they stimulated in 20 subjects 10,000 lux light, which was supposed to be about the same lux we get from the sun. They did 7 hours exposure during this proper circadian phase of bright light, and then they did 3 lux of dim light thereafter. They found that stimulating sunlight caused an acute suppressive effect of cortisol levels during the circadian phase. So let me explain this to you. Cortisol is meant to spike to get us up out of bed, and then it's supposed to taper off through the day. So if we get that early morning sun exposure or that daytime sun exposure, how many people in here, show of hands, have you spent like a day on the lake and that night you just slept amazing? Or you spent a day in the sun and that night you slept amazing? That is why that daylight is signaling our hypothalamus to reduce cortisol and elevate melatonin, and we sleep like a baby that night. So that is a prover of why that happens, and then the science again confirmed it. So essential oils and adaptogen herbs, I'm not going to get into that. That's Dr. Axe's website. He uses that for also reducing cortisol. So if you have a diffuser, you can use essential oils. things like that, to help you during your me time, or while you're taking a bath, or while you're reading a book, or whatever it is. So, acupuncture and chiropractic massage, we all know that getting adjusted or massaged or acupuncture can really lower stress and make you feel like, oh, like a noodle the rest of the day, and that's why. So it lowers cortisol. So melatonin, PubMed findings, the stuff I found on melatonin. Basically, this is a paper on how melatonin light was the primary factor that controlled melatonin synthesis. Light. Again, so here we go. Back to the sunlight exposure and the light in our own homes. So we can actually suppress our melatonin by the light in our own homes at night. So if you're one of those people that has to have every light in the house on after 6 or 7 o'clock, and you could be suppressing your melatonin. So there's another study I found on that exact thing. I don't have the link for that one on here, but basically they took these individuals and they put them under the same lux lighting I talked about earlier. So 2 days of nonstop 10,000 lux light, and they tested their cortisol every 4 hours. Then they put them on 2 days of this 3 lux light, nonstop for 2 days, tested their cortisol every 4 hours. There was a night and day difference. They said it cut their cortisol by 50% in 85% of the subjects. So it cut their cortisol in half just from the room lighting, just from the lighting that they got above them. So that should show us that at night, when we're ready to wind down, we should be dimming the lights in our house as much as we can, or sitting by candles. I know this sounds crazy, but this is our environment. Think about it. 100 years ago, just 100 years ago, we were not sitting under lights. Why are we so obese today? Why are we so sick today? Why? Okay, they said, I heard this other day, it's estimated by 2030 that no kids will be funded for school, there will be no grants or scholarships, every dollar of our money will be going to obesity, diabetes, and metabolic disease, because that's the race we're trending at right now. By 2030, if we keep it up, that is what we will have as an outcome. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. So if we don't turn that trend around, we won't have any money for anything else as a country or as the earth, basically. So the light thing is important. We're going to talk about blue light and house light exposure. So how do we limit that? Dim our lights is one. We can wear blue light glasses that also block the lighting in our house. But they also block the lighting we get from unnatural light. I heard this the other day too, when I was at a conference, that the light that is in our cities are actually changing the migration of our animals, and it's messing with their environment because they are thrown off by all this unnatural light at night, and it's making them migrate to places that they never migrated, and it's changing not only their environment, but our ecosystem as well. Really, really interesting stuff. I mean, there's a lot of information out there if you just do your research and look at this light stuff, because it's important. So since I started doing it, marked improvement in my sleep, like night and day, marked improvement. I used to spend every night an hour on my phone, and then I would set it down and go to sleep. And since I started doing that, by my wearable, I can track and see my sleep cycles are so much deeper. And I wake up and I can just, that's the main part, I can feel the difference since I started implementing some of these practices. More melatonin. Melatonin is produced by the amino acid tryptophan, which is why when we eat a lot of turkey, because turkey is really high in tryptophan, after Thanksgiving dinner or whatever, you will have a huge like crash that you wanted to sleep. You know what I mean? That's why. So that can raise your melatonin. There's a lot of other meats that also are high in tryptophan. But you getting more zinc is important, getting more folate, more vegetables showed a 16% increase in melatonin just by eating more vegetables. So that's a hack right there. You're getting healthier, you're losing weight, and you're raising your melatonin just from eating more vegetables. All right. Early morning sunlight is another one. Wearing blue light blockers, we talked about. Okay. Are you sleeping? Are you really sleeping? So, there's a lot of people that, I talk to my clients, and they're like, yeah, I sleep 7 or 8 hours. And I'm like, yeah, but I wonder what, I don't tell them this, but I'm like, I wonder what the quality of that 7 or 8 hours is. You know, because I was sleeping 7 or 8 hours too before I started implementing some of these practices. And it wasn't until that I started doing some of these things that I actually was like, whoa, I slept really, really good last night, and I can feel the difference. I can feel my energy is higher, and things are firing on all cylinders. And not to get too nerdy on you, but our mitochondria, which is energy production systems in our cells, our mitochondria actually have been shown to function higher in dark light, or I'm sorry, dark light, in dark rooms with no light. So blackout curtains are really, really important also, because remember, light affects our melatonin. So if light can affect our melatonin, then we also don't want to have our mitochondria affected by our melatonin. That's our energy production system. So right down here, Bed Bath & Beyond, $20 a curtain. We got blackout curtains. Amazing difference. Amazing, amazing difference on sleep quality just from that. Especially because I have a stupid street light right outside my window that I want to blast with a 12-gauge shotgun, because this thing is like buzzing yellow light in my bedroom window. And then I found out, I was talking to my neighbor, and I didn't tell him this, but he was telling me how he fought the city to try to get that light up because he thought it would make a safer neighborhood. And I'm like, I'm listening to him, I'm like, you're the reason there's a light right outside my bedroom. So anyways, here it is. Limit your caffeine to early morning. Now I can click on this. This is my, I'll show you the picture so you can get a visual look of the effects of this sleep right here. Check this out. So this was 8 hours and 8 minutes, okay? This was 8 hours and 8 minutes of sleep. I'm getting good sleep, right? Look at the efficiency, 91%. I had 4 hours of motionless and 4 hours and 8 minutes of light sleep, okay? This is before I cut my 100 milligrams of caffeine that I was doing every morning. That's it, that's not even that much. 100 milligrams is nothing compared to some people that drink 300, 400, 500 milligrams throughout the day, you know what I mean? So, I cut that to decaf, 15 to 30 milligrams of caffeine roughly, right? This is my average. So this was one of those 3 days. I tested it for 3 days. This was one of those 3 days, and all three of them looked just like this. 95% efficiency. I upped my motionless sleep by 2 hours, and I cut my light sleep down by 2 hours. And look at those deep cycles compared to this choppiness. And I can, right now, if you're interested, when you, after this is over, I can show you all my sleep data. And before I did that, they all looked just like this, choppy. And then now, I average stuff that looks like this. And I feel so much better. And this, I'm not, this wasn't even like years ago. This was literally like, what, babe, like seven, eight weeks ago? I just figured this out. I mean, I just figured it out. So, important stuff, just on reducing caffeine. That's it. It's not even like all the other stuff. You combine grounding, and you combine blackout curtains, and blue light blockers, and dimming our house lights, and all this other stuff can add to those deep cycles and make you feel like $1 million. So, tips for improving sleep. Remember these three tips. And that thing's messing up my bottom, but up your magnesium citrate or magnesium glycinate, okay? It's right over here. 500 to 1,000 milligrams a day right before bed, so an hour before bed, and then it'll make you sleep. It'll make you go to sleep, and it'll make you stay asleep. And magnesium is an essential mineral that we have to have. Sodium, potassium, magnesium, those are our essential minerals. Mm-hmm. Have to have. If we are deficient in magnesium, it causes a lot of problems. So blackout curtains cover every little light in your room. Every little light can make a difference. So the LED light on my phone, I flip my phone over. Okay, I turn my phone either on airplane mode or off. So I'm not an important person. I don't need people contacting me at 2 in the morning. And I don't, you know what I mean? That's not, if that's not you, then why have your phone on? You're just taking in more EMFs and Wi-Fi and signal energy that we didn't have, again, 100 years ago. Okay, so we're talking about improving our environment. Limit blue light from screens and household lights. So we can actually raise our melatonin by our screens that we have in front of us, whether it be computer screens, tablets, phones. If you don't believe me, look it up. Dr. Google will tell you all about it. There's all kinds of studies that have proven that this blue light we get from our devices has been shown to raise our cortisol and lower our melatonin and affect our sleep. So look into that. I challenge you. All right, so we haven't even got into leptin yet. So problem number 3 is ghrelin and leptin. So this is probably the most complicated out of all of them, is the leptin hormone. So we have this hormone that when we eat, it sends a signal to the brain to tell us that we have enough fuel and that we can stop eating, okay? So leptin, we have this marked rise when we eat, and then we have, as hours go on, we have this fall, and then we eat again, and we have this rise, right? So again, leptin and ghrelin are on a teeter-totter. When leptin is high, ghrelin is low. Ghrelin is growling. That's when your stomach's growling. It's produced by the stomach, sends a signal to the brain that your stomach is empty, and we need to eat. Okay, so we want our leptin and our ghrelin to be balanced to have this nice even flow. So basically, ghrelin makes our stomach growl and tells us to eat. The hormone imbalance that can cause a huge swing in ghrelin and leptin. So now we have, and I'll tell you how this happens. We have this huge swing of leptin, and then we have this huge dip and too much ghrelin, and then we have this huge spike in leptin. And what happens is the brain starts to become resistant to that leptin signal. And this can be problematic, because if leptin tells us we're full and we have too much of that signal, then all of a sudden your brain becomes resistant to it and it's not telling you you're full anymore because it's resistant. So here's what I want you to understand. Low levels of ghrelin make you store everything as fat. Okay, and I got into this because I had a few clients who they just could not lose weight. They came to me because they cut calories to 1,000 calories a day, and they worked their tail off, and they could not lose weight. And I was like, okay, something is really metabolically screwed up here. It's either the thyroid or, you know, something is completely wrong. So that's whenever my sister actually got me to look into this direction. And leptin, when it's really low, we store everything as fat. When we're resistant to the signal, it's just like being really low, so we store everything as fat. So what they found is that obese subjects, every time, had leptin levels through the roof, which doesn't make sense, because if your leptin levels tell you you're full, why are all these people overeating? Because they sent signals to their body so high all the time that the brain became resistant to it. So let me explain to you how this happens. We eat breakfast, we snack. We eat lunch, we snack. We eat dinner, we snack before bed. When do our leptin levels ever come down? When does our brain get a break from the leptin signal so that it's sensitive to it? You see where I'm going with this? So now the brain has, it said, well, I always have leptin. It's like the boy who cried wolf, you know? I'm not going to down-regulate, you know, all these things and start burning fat for fuel. So then your body thinks it's starving all the time. So you know what it's doing? It's taking energy and cramming it into the fat cells. As soon as your muscles and liver are full, it's cramming all your fuel into fat cells. So this is why people get stuck in the rut where they can't lose weight. So no matter how less they eat or how much they work out or whatever. And the bad part is this is probably one of the things that takes the longest to reverse as well. So, in summary, a high-fat diet balances our leptin, which suppresses ghrelin, so we can go longer without eating. when we go longer, that leptin level drops and we get a little bit more sensitive to it. And then, and this is, comes from not eating every 2 hours. I used to be a bodybuilder like mentality that I had to eat every 2 or 3 hours or I was going to catabolize muscle. And then I realized that's really, really unhealthy. So this allows for insulin and blood glucose to come down to a level that also promotes fat burning, because remember we talked about insulin. Okay, so you can still see how these things are all working together. Cortisol, melatonin, insulin, leptin, all these things are working together for a proper metabolism, okay? So, what did I do? I don't know what I did. There we go. So, avoiding leptin resistance. That's what this term is called, is leptin resistance, when your body becomes resistant to the signal. All right, so the leptin is actually produced in the fat cell. Insulin is produced in the pancreas. Ghrelin is produced in the stomach, okay? So we want to, and see how our hypothalamus actually controls our energy expenditure and our energy intake, okay? That's that balance there. So if one of these things gets out of whack with too much insulin or too much leptin or a combination of both, then our energy expenditure intake balance gets thrown off and we start developing these problems. So how do we avoid leptin resistance? Fructose is one of the worst things. Fructose and lectins are the two worst things. You don't know what lectin is? L-E-C-T-I-N. You can research what those are. They're found in wheat products. They're found in a lot of different foods. But they will spike leptin levels to astronomically high amounts that get our body to not hear that signal and get start getting resistant. So, high stress levels. Let's see where I'm at here. High stress levels. They took 67 women and they examined adiposity. That is adipose tissue. So they examined fat gain with 67 women, right? Now, leptin and acute stress is the other two that they measured. So they measured their leptin levels, they measured their acute stress, and they measured their adiposity, right? In 67 women. Women with higher basal leptin levels had greater adiposity than the same, women with the highest leptin levels had the greatest belly fat, and they also had the highest levels of chronic stress. So all these things went together, okay, in 67 women with the leptin levels and the stress measured. That's what they found, okay? So lack of stress is a huge, or I'm sorry, high stress is a huge one. So one, again, take that me time, get our cortisol down, get the stress down. You can see how this works together. Consumption of a lot of simple carbs, because we're sending these huge leptin signals through the simple carbs, and that's also going to keep our leptin signaling really, really high, okay? Lack of sleep was another one. Let's see what the study was on that one. They did a study with police officers. They also did a study with 23 men and 15 women. The one with police officers, under 5 hours of sleep, every time had higher concentration of leptin levels. So under 5 hours of sleep in these police officers, their leptin levels were through the roof, okay? The 23 men, the 15 women, after restricting their sleep, they found they could raise their leptin levels by restricting their sleep in a laboratory setting. So lack of sleep is another one. You want chronically high leptin and that your body's gonna get resistant to that signal, then lack of sleep is what we want to definitely avoid. High insulin levels. So, insulin and leptin. It took 23 obese people and 19 non-obese people. Okay, so both obese and non-obese, right? And they measured their glucose, their leptin, their insulin. Every single time, if the leptin was elevated, the insulin was elevated. If the insulin was elevated, the leptin was elevated. But glucose had no correlation. It could be either way. So We know that glucose was not a variable factor, but every time insulin was elevated, the leptin was elevated too. So we want to avoid high insulin levels. How do we do that? Avoiding, number two, avoiding consumption of a lot of simple carbs. Overeating, we already talked about that, snacking too much. Chronic cardio, there's that stress again, talked about that. Now, biohacks for leptin sensitivity, like we talked about, quit snacking between meals. So we want to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Okay, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We don't want to snack in between meals. So break yourself of that habit. If you have to go out of the house with something with you, or you're worried, if you're thinking about what you're going to snack while you're eating, there's pretty commonly a leptin problem there. Or if you're thinking about your next meal while you're eating the meal you're eating, I'm kind of a foodie, so I sometimes do that, but still, we just want to be aware of these things. So implement healthy fats and lower carbs. Healthy fats, they actually, they get our leptin levels at a more stability range, where we're full and we stay full in between meals, okay? Eat tons of omega-3s and get morning daytime sunlight. So the morning sunlight, that's an article that Dr. Jack Cruz wrote. It's an excellent article on how early morning sunlight helps reset our circadian function, including our leptin levels, okay? So that's the morning sunlight thing we talked about already. Omega-3s, this is the European Journal of Clinical Nutrition, and it's a study on how omega-3s actually lowered leptin levels in individuals, okay? So, we're almost there, folks, hang with me. Work on the gut health, probiotics, and bone broth, and prebiotics, which are vegetables. They feed the healthy gut bacteria, so we want to put healthy bacteria in, then we want to feed that healthy bacteria. Bone broth is another one that's really healing for the gut, that's going to heal the gut lining if you have some leaky gut problems. So, all those things work together to biohack our leptin sensitivity, okay? All right, so this was one I made to show you how this all comes together, all right? All of it comes together. So if we have high levels of insulin, we have elevated insulin leads to higher inflammation, weight gain, and begins to stress the body, okay? Cortisol rises. Excess stress from insulin, inflammation, and free radical damage, and blood sugar swings cause cortisol to rise. All right? Now we're starting to kill our melatonin. Cortisol kills our melatonin along with no sunshine and too much blue light and house light. Now our sleeping quality tanks. Okay? Ghrelin, how many people have heard that it's proven that people that sleep poorly eat more the next day? You guys heard that before? Yeah. So this is why. Ghrelin goes higher when we get poor sleep. We overeat, so sleep is in the mud, and our cravings go through the roof. More snacking happens, more glucose and insulin. The weight starts packing on. The person gets worried, and the stress goes higher. Okay? So the stress goes higher. This is how many? The stress goes higher, and then it's like, I'm having a donut. So you have the donut, all right? And then you're like, I can't do that. I gotta exercise. So excess weight causes you to hit the treadmill or the elliptical for an hour every day. Your weight just doesn't barely move, or if it does, it's just a little bit, and then you start really feeling miserable because now you're taxing an overstressed body. You're heavier than you were before. You're more stressed. You're not sleeping well. Things just start to get this cycle going. Now your cortisol is really, really raised. Okay. So stress is majorly increased. We are now regularly catabolizing muscle tissue, burning out our adrenals, storing tons of fat as if a famine were happening. Now, the more fat you have, remember, leptin is produced in the fat cell. So guess what happens with the more weight you put on and the more fat cells you stuff? You get higher leptin. Okay? That's where leptin comes from, is our fat cells. So when you get higher leptin, our leptin levels rise, and so does the blood sugar, the insulin spike, and your body becomes resistant to the leptin signal, signaling the brain you have adequate fuel, so you begin storing everything you eat. I'm sorry, I cut off there. Your brain is not signaling the body that you have adequate fuel, So you are storing everything you eat. Now, you know what happens next? Your leptin levels are out of control. You're storing everything, and this is what happens next. Ice cream. So when the ice cream hits, now you see the leptin is low, we have these, or the high, we have these huge cravings. Everything spirals out of control and starts the whole cycle over again. We have this huge insulin spike, and our cortisol gets high. You can just see how this all works together, okay? So that's what my purpose in doing this was to try to educate people on little ways that you can implement on each one of these things. How do we lower cortisol? How do we lower our leptin to a sensitive point, our insulin to a sensitive point, and maximize sleep, performance, you know, all these things, right? So the order of importance here, this is, I'm not going to go over this with you guys, but you can look back at this and know the order of importance. So controlling your blood sugar, lowering stress, optimize your sleep, optimize leptin sensitivity, lift heavy things or sprint, and then follow my Facebook page and Instagram for recipes and meal ideas. So yeah, basically that's it. Balance is the key to life. Find balance in these things, start implementing some of these practices, and see if you have the greater success that I've had in doing some of these things. So thank you guys very much.
How do you spell out your website?
Muscles and veggies. All one word.
All one word.
Yep.
With A and D between
them. Yep. Muscles and veggies. VEGGIES. Go ahead.
Hey, you kept saying fructose is bad.
Yeah.
Another question. Are you saying that processed fructose, such as fructose corn syrup, or are we talking about fructose that comes from actually eating fruit off the tree?
So, obviously, the worst syrup of the two would be the high fructose corn syrup. But fructose, and if you really do the research on like high levels of fructose in fruit and honey and things like that, they are shown to not spike insulin as high, but they're harder to process in the liver. And so what they're finding is in the scientific literature that fructose is one of the major causes of fatty liver disease. So I challenge you to look that up and research what fructose and fatty liver disease and the correlation, and start to see if you can see some of the same data that I've seen that's like, whoa, fruit here and there is okay, but on a regular, consistent, everyday basis may not be for some people. So that's just some of the stuff that I found. And then with leptin, they're proving that fructose and lectins are really, really not good for people with leptin resistance because it spikes those leptin levels really high.
Leptin,
yeah. LECTIN, not LEPTIN for leptin. Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
I have a couple questions. So is magnesium better to take than melatonin for a sleep?
Yes. There's controversy on this. But I'm under the impression that it's just logical to me that I want to produce endogenously my own melatonin. And if I take it exogenously, then it could suppress my body's function to make it naturally. So I take melatonin, but it's on a very like once a week basis. There's one night of the week that I'm up later than usual. And I want to make sure that my melatonin is good that night. So I take it on that night, but I don't take it on a regular basis. And that's why I want to make sure my body is efficient at producing it naturally.
And about the calories, like I've counted calories and I lost weight that way, so I don't really understand.
That was my question too, right? Because in bodybuilding, that's how everyone scales down for a show and gets ripped, and they do it off like a calorie, literally like they live and die by 50 calories, right? So I'm like, well, how does this work for some people? But for people with leptin resistance, it's not working. And so that's what made me dive into the literature and figure out that the signal isn't reaching the hypothalamus that you are getting enough energy. And so the brain isn't telling the body to metabolize fat, it's actually telling you to store fat. So there's nothing wrong with I'm a firm believer that if you eat too much, that your body's not going to utilize it, just like that cup. It's going to spill over. No, I don't care if it's fat or carbs or whatever, you know what I mean? So finding, if you're not leptin resistant, I do encourage you not to count calories, because I think that can be stressful and it can raise your cortisol and all that, right? And it's time consuming, but to find a balance in what works for you. So I don't know if that really answers. It is, yeah. It is. And if you're not leptin resistant and you're not hypothyroid or something like that, then yeah, like you can just titrate your food levels and that will usually titrate your weight. You know what I mean? Yes, ma'am.
You recommend doing 3 times daily, not 5 times daily.
Yes, ma'am. That is correct. That was an old, they said it speeds my metabolism to eat every 2 or 3 hours, right? That's what you've heard. So Dr. Oz and all these people, they say eat every 2 or 3 hours and speed your metabolism. Well, that may work for a little while, but again, we're talking about those hormones that are signals to the brain. So over time, you're continuing to signal the brain with insulin and with leptin, and so the brain starts to become resistant to it, and all of a sudden, those 6 meals a day aren't working anymore.
You mentioned Dr. Oz. I don't like him. When I found him, I started to watch him, but I have a lot of frailty, doctor, and I started to call and ask, and they told me, this is not right. I went with my relative. I have a cousin that is a gastroenterology, and he told to me, no, don't do that. And one day I found my news that Dr. Oz was suing for exactly what he was telling to do, that my cousin said, don't do it.
Yeah, and then I've actually seen a couple episodes where he's like, I know I said this before, but I want to recant what I said before about this, and he'll completely flip-flop on stuff that he told millions of people. When you have a platform like that, I think it's so important that you give accurate information. When you have a platform of millions of people that go and live, they live by your advice.
I think that he's more movie star than a doctor.
He's a salesman.
Yes.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is.
I don't like to take the melatonin because it puts me such a deep sleep, I have terrible dreams.
Yeah. And I've heard other people that wake up groggy from too much melatonin. And your melatonin is supposed to shut off about 6 a.m. and stop pumping into your system, because that's right about the same time that cortisol goes and gets you up out of bed, which is what you want. So that's part of the problem with a higher cortisol during the day tapers off slower, so then you have a later release of the melatonin and you wake up groggier in the morning. And that's basically what you're
doing. Magnesium, but what does serotonin have to do with sleep?
Serotonin? I don't remember about putting that in there.
Someone was saying that if you raise your serotonin, it's better than melatonin.
If you raise your serotonin, it's better than the melatonin? I don't know. I have to look into that. I haven't looked it up. I love nerding out on this stuff, so I'll look into it and see. Yes, sir.
You can change your light bulbs. Daylight light bulbs have a lot of blue light, whereas soft white is much yellower light, so there's a lot less blue light.
Yeah, incandescent is pretty much the lowest light bulbs. Plus, they're dimmable. But the LED is actually, I think, LED is the worst.
They come in all colors also.
That is true. We use LED and we turn them on red at night, and that doesn't give you that blue light. Actually, red light blocks blue light, so you can't use LEDs in that. But yeah, thanks for sharing that. Yes, sir.
I don't want to be the guy to ask too many questions. I'm glad I asked you.
No, go ahead.
Okay, you said something about caffeine earlier.
Yeah.
Caffeine, in your system 8 hours and then having it.
Yeah.
There's been studies of tea, especially green tea and especially matcha, having anti-cancer benefits.
Yeah.
So what do you, because I battle anxiety, so I've had, I mean, this one cup of coffee is all for like the next 2 days.
Yeah.
What about green tea and black tea and orange tea? What do you suggest for that?
I think those things are great, man. I really do. I think they're great. I just would, if you're trying to optimize your melatonin, I would have them earlier in the day, as early as you can, because that's what I'm figuring out with caffeine for me. is the earlier I have it, then I know the levels of it are going to titrate down and off on the end of the day when I want to wind down and go to sleep and sleep eat. So that's what I would recommend. And there's nothing wrong with them. Like, they're great. And there is all kinds of benefits and polyphenols and different antioxidants that are in tea that are fantastic. And they just get it in earlier than the day.
So not really the source of the timing.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Caffeine's half-life. If you want to Google caffeine half-life, that's where you can learn about what the half-life of caffeine is and how that works, and play with those levels of caffeine, you know what I mean?
What about the people that say that decaf is bad?
Exactly, this is like my question. What about decaf coffee, decaf tea? Because I try to buy decaf coffee and decaf green tea.
You know what, I haven't read anything on that.
The process and the chemicals.
Yeah, I haven't read anything on that to give me a quick drink and decaf, honestly.
Well, I like to know, this is really true that it doesn't have caffeine.
It does. It has decaf still has trace amounts of caffeine in it. Yeah, it's not caffeine free. That's why none of them say caffeine free, they just say decaf. So that's where I told you I'm still getting like 15, 30 milligrams of caffeine in my decaf.
Yes.
A cup of coffee is roughly, depending on how tall your cup of coffee is, about 15 to 20 to 30 milligrams of caffeine still in that decaf. But I haven't looked into, and I'm glad you guys are asking me that, because I will all look into that and see more of what, if decaf does have ill health benefits from the processing of it. I've never heard that before.
Processes of decaffeinated coffee. One is a Swiss process using carbon dioxide, and the other one is a weird process that just uses no caffeine solution with a high caffeine solution, but a membrane between the caffeine migrates. So between the two.
Interesting. Do you know, have you heard anything about it being unhealthy?
Well, the Swiss process is supposed to be less, it's not very few chemicals involved.
You mentioned that, about bone broth. In here, I bought last Saturday, a week ago, bone broth protein.
Yeah.
What are you thinking about it?
Oh, yeah, love it. Love it. I've seen in Justin and me and my wife's use of bone broth really, really cleared up leaky gut issues and helped strengthen the gut lining. And I just think it's phenomenal.
They selling bone broth and they selling another one from bone broth with collagen. Which one do you recommend?
I recommend making your own, because just if you make a whole chicken and just keep your bones, put them in a Ziploc bag in the freezer. That's how we do it. And we pour, when that bag gets full, we pour them all into a big pot and we boil them for like 2.5-3 days. And that collagen rises to the top. I mean, that stuff's phenomenal. And you just strain that out. We put it in mason jars and freeze it, and then pull it out as we need it. You know, cook with it.
Okay.
Cook your rice with it, or if you ever have rice or something like that.
I don't eat rice. Well, my friend, what she does, she buy feed from chicken.
Yeah.
And she boil it.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Yep. Yeah, you said 2 or 3 days. How do you do that?
Ben, what do you put it on, like 2 or 3 on the stove?
Yeah.
You kind of boil it that first day, huh?
You boil it for like 30 minutes, I think, and then after that you let it simmer for the rest of the time. And it gets pretty low, but it's the thicker it is, the better, because it's not everything.
How do you think you bone broth?
I just stick all the bones in there, and I boil it for half an hour, and then you can let it skim off the gross stuff off the top, and then you simmer it for 2 days at least.
Well, you need to simmer the
It just depends on your stove. Mine is like 2. I have an induction stove top, so it's 2. But before it was low, and if you have gas, I don't know. You just want to see it where it's bubbling just a little, but not very much.
I'm so crock pot.
Well, you have a crock pot. Yeah, that's how I do mine. My crock pot will boil, so if you get it to boil, then just put it out the next.
I wake up in the middle of the night, I'm like, I'm hungry.
Oh, it should be organic because after everything that I eat is organic. The chicken, everything is organic. What about the bone broth? The bone should be organic?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to cook with organic meat, you'll have organic bones, so.
Yeah, but the fact is that I like everything without bone.
Oh, yeah. I would recommend it. I mean.
Organic.
Yeah, I would.
Because they say bone, just bone without meat.
Yeah.
But they're not organic.
Yeah. Yeah, I would if you could, because, I mean, I hate to bring it back to as simple as this, but if you are what you eat and the cow is what it eats, if it's eating non-GMO soy and corn, then its bone's going to have non-GMO soy and corn in it. You know?
When I was a child, I loved to go to my own house because of the beach and to eat. And she pushed us to drink a glass of milk every morning. Oh my God, I didn't want to leave for the day. For the taste of the milk.
Yeah.
Now I found with my cousin that what was the kind of grass that the cows was eating that gave the taste of the milk.
Huh.
I don't know English, but it's anamu. Oh my God, this meal was so ugly tasted. And the one at home was so delicious.
Thank you guys for coming.
Thank you.
Enjoy your Saturday.
Is all the sun your sun?
It is. It is.
You paste. You find you.
Okay.
What can you do? You are a doctor?
No, I am a personal trainer.
You are a coach. Yeah, I helped coach. You know when you start, I think that you will describe me. Yeah, yeah. Full stress because I have the business and it's a good plastic. And it's really hard. What I do now, to let's say the last few weeks, I'm taking two kilos of Valeriana through night, and something that you don't know is peace of mind. Because it's a herb and you need to drink from Pennsylvania or New Jersey because this is the second doctor in here and I know him since probably 15 years ago. I still was drinking my coffee.
Yeah.
And I'm sleeping really good.
Yeah.
This guy beat me. He faced acupuncture in North United States.
Yeah.
He took one woman and he put all the body full of milk that you couldn't see. No one is, no one available.
Yeah.
These trees.
Yeah.
One day I saw my cow, I was thinking, oh my God, these trees. The political problem with you delivering a lot to China, the employees, that you don't do that, it's okay.
Yeah,
it gives me that without all the
pressure. Email me your questions, Karen. I'll be glad to email you back.